Hold on tight for the next hour. You're entering into a place, a zone called the alternative to the alternative media. It's a place, a special place, where even truth seekers fear to tread.
All right, people, let's move like you've got a purpose.
Affirmative.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Greg Anthony Show and my investigative journal on this Thursday, January 6, 2022, day on our calendar. Wow, what a show I have for you today. I want to tell you, if you've been following my shows this week, they've been fascinating from a standpoint of how could I have missed, or maybe you, have missed all those buildings, those ornate structures, those cathedrals, all of those beautiful structures in Moscow, in every city of the world. And how could we have never asked the question, could they really have built them? And I'm talking about the 19th century people, the Victorian era, horse and cart, shovels, nothing like that. How could they have done that? And, it's a fascinating story. It gets me away from the craziness that's going on in the world today, and it has a purpose, really. Because, really, how can we really go forward if we really don't understand what happened in the ancient world and in our history? As Napoleon said, and I've been quoting this this week, it's a great quote. He said, "History is the compilation of agreed-upon lies." And the question becomes, who agrees upon these lies? And I think it must be obvious to people who even consider what I do as conspiracy theory, etc., etc., obvious that it must be all these world leaders, must be all these world leaders of religion that are agreed upon lying to us continually, not only about the ancient past, but about what's exactly going on today. And I think people are seeing it right before their very eyes. Now, it's nothing to be frightened about, because what we do here basically is guesswork. I mean, if you think about, if I say something like, in the ancient world, there were fallen angels, the trees were 6 miles high, and the earth is nothing but a large quarry that was mined years before we started mining, people are going to go, how does he know that? Well, I don't know that. But tell me your theory about what happened. And basically, how do you come to that conclusion, no matter what it is? By what people tell you. And can you believe what people tell you? I'm always fascinated by how people are so gullible and believe everything, including me, for many, many years. But all it takes is one spark, one thing that triggers you to start questioning everything. Now, some people start in the spiritual world. Other people start in the real stupid world like me and take it from different angles. For example, some people study good. Some people study the Psalms in the Bible and all of the good things in the world and basically say that there's another way past what we do in this crazy world. And others like me began to study evil because I figured if the enemy is really out to kill us and to make our lives miserable throughout the centuries, wouldn't it be good to know what they do and what they believe and what they're hiding from us? So you come at it from many different angles. So people are asking, I got three emails yesterday, Greg, where are you going with this? I mean, we've got a calamity going on in the world. We got humanity at a brink, and you're worried about some cathedral in Dresden, Germany. And I said, well, that's a good question, because sometimes I wonder where I am going with it, but I think the reason for doing it is that the more you start opening doors that you've never opened before, uncovering the lies that have been told to us since we were children, you start really understanding a little bit more about who is on what side of the fence, so to speak. And what side of the fence are you on? For example, we could take many examples, but let's use the one going on today. Are you going to fall in line just to go to Walmart and be on the side of evil? And I say it bluntly, Or are you going to take a stand and know to do the right thing and know what's going on? But how do you get to that conclusion? Well, you got to read both sides of what's going on. Read what some doctors are saying. Read what other doctors are saying. And not that you can believe anything. But also think about, you know, common sense. And think about that in your daily life, what's going on today. And a lot of what's going on from the pulpits of our Christian churches, our Catholic churches, and a lot what's going on from all the world leaders doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But many people will blindly follow it. So, back to the buildings. Yes, if you follow my show this week, we've discussed how it's impossible, really, for the 19th century Victorian era to build those things, even the centuries that preceded it. So where did they come from? And we're going through a series of questions regarding that to try to get to the idea of what happened pre-flood and then after the flood. Okay, I want to make this statement right now. Most everything we do, whatever you believe regarding history in the past, is guesswork. Based on what you read from people that you may not trust, based on a lot of different things. So really, if you come up and say something like, I know exactly what happened back in the old days, I'd have to say no, you don't. Because most of it is all guesswork. But what you try to do is gather as many facts as you can from as many sources, as many theories, and start going through them and say, what makes sense and what doesn't? And these buildings are a great example. Because if you really look at them, and I spent last night having some fun, because I said when I started this quest of trying to uncover these, who built these buildings, using the help of that gentleman that presented that video that we're going through, and I'm going to play a little bit of more today in the second half to keep some continuity here. You can find him. His name that he goes by is E-W-A-R-A-N-O-N. And you can just Google that. Many of his YouTube channel has just been taken down. And you can find him scattered all over on other forums. But he does he spent a lot of time researching because he puts the dots together in a way that makes more sense than the narrative you get from the leaders of the world. So, it's worth looking at. So anyway, I spent last night going over a whole bunch of photographs taken when the camera was just invented back in the early 1800s. And it's remarkable the number of buildings I saw, just exactly what he said on the video. And then you'll see no people. You wonder, where are they? Just like he said. And then you'll see people, but on horse and cart, with roads that were muddy, that were uneven. And you saw in the background all these shacks, and you wonder, how would they spend time building all these ornate buildings? And I mean, you have to go over all of them, and I mean in every part of the world. And you go, something doesn't make sense here. And the narrative that you're getting from the Wikipedia, the leaders of the world, how they, for example, Old Penn Station in New York, what a structure it was. And they said it was built in 7 years. Impossible. Impossible, but people believe it, including me. I think it's like the Santa Claus syndrome. You know, when you're a kid, you believe in Santa Claus. And they tell you that he's up in the North Pole, comes down and gives you gifts and goes back there. And then as we get older and realize that Santa Claus was fictional, we still believe the North Pole is the way it's described by our leaders and by Santa. Maybe little elves there. And again, what I say is that these buildings take you on a journey all over the place. Remember we talked about the orphans? And we're still going to talk more about that. Why were there so many orphans all over the world during this time that we're talking about? And why were there empty streets maybe 30 or 40 years before? A lot of questions, and it takes you in so many directions that you can just put them all in a hat, pull one out. Let me do that right now. Okay, I am dreaming, not of a white Christmas, Although sometimes I still sing that song when I think of that five-letter word, you know the one I'm talking about, that I promise never to mention on this show. Because I came down with that five-letter word called the five-letter word hoof and mouth disease, which means that every time I heard it, I got so fed up with what was going on, I'd start singing to forget about it. And that's why I didn't do any shows for about 4 months. But anyway, so pull out of my hat the North Pole, right? And a story like what we're talking about with these buildings leads you to another door. What was the, you know, doesn't it really make sense that it should be discussed? We live on this plane. Some people think it's a planet, so we won't get judgmental. But what is it? I mean, the North Pole is really important, right? We're told that. But what are we told about what it looks like? Okay, right now we're told that it's just ice floating on top of water. Then you Google the North Pole, and they've taken even the ice away, and it's just water. But is that really what the North Pole is like? And who mapped the North Pole for the first time? You know, we're going to talk about that the rest of this half hour, then get to the buildings again to try to make sure we get through that door. But who really mapped the North Pole for the first time? And you know how I feel about maps. I don't trust any of them. Modern maps, old maps, any map. People come up with the flat earth map. I don't trust that. I don't trust the planet maps. I don't trust anything. Because I think a lot of them are inaccurate. And then I ran across somebody who said, there's an accurate map of the earth that's on the face of the moon. And it's basically a reflection taken in time, the same one all the time, as if it was a photograph. And I said, okay. And once we get to that story, you'll think I'm completely insane, but I'm not. Usually insane people say they're not. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. That's judgmental. By stating that someone is insane without doing a study in insanity. But anyway, we're told that, you know, if you believe Google, you believe Santa Claus, you believe, what they tell you, it's ice on top of water. But is it? Back in 1569, Gerard Mercator, he was a 16th century map maker, mapped the North Pole for the first time. And you look at these maps and you start wondering, what was he thinking? How did he know it? And he had firsthand knowledge, or was it from someone else that visited the North Pole? Yes. And that becomes interesting because the man that had visited the North Pole back then that gave him this description, his books have not been able to be found. Okay? Now, I wonder who has them. But anyway, what he said was by the 1500s, there were many people had ventured up to the Arctic. The explorer would set foot on the pole itself. Until 1909, they said. They didn't stop Mercator, who dug into some of the dicey sources, this is what they say, to come up with a map. And what was his map? What did it look like? And I'm taking a look at it now. The North Pole, he says, and he took it as if it was a flat earth map, okay? In the middle is a big, huge cliff or rock, okay? That's basically electromagnetized. And around it were swirling waters. And there were stories of ships that had gone up there that got caught in those waters and never seen again. Now, around those swirling waters, now if you think about it, if the black, big, huge rock is there, or was there, then, and it was electromagnetized, it would pull everything to it, explaining the swirling waters going counterclockwise, he said. And around it were four distinct pieces of land, okay? And he goes in depth describing these pieces from someone that he met, that he trusted, that had set foot there. Okay, so that goes without saying, to be, you know, different than the story we're told today. So how do we really know? And I could go on with this with very detailed discussions on other maps that were drawn and other ideas. And, of course, you're going to get people to say, no, no, you got to believe we're more advanced. We know everything now. So these people, you know, were basically going on hearsay. Now, his map isn't very accurate when you start looking at other maps. But then what is totally accurate? Okay. The question is, most of it's guesswork. And to understand, I guess, what the North Pole is right now, we'd really have to go there. And how many of you or me will ever do that? No. So who are we going to trust? I think what we have to do here is put together as many facts as we can, open that door and say, hey, maybe we're not being told the truth, even about the shape of the Earth, what the size, what the North Pole's really like, what Antarctica's really like. And we get into a whole big discussion then on either the heliocentric theory or the theory of the geocentric theory. And we go from there. So that's what happens when you start opening these doors to get to what we call the narrow gate, getting through that to somewhere else that we know is better than here. And the reason I say that is it could lead to many, many places. And what we're going to try to do is put that all together. Okay, so to end this, let's see what Mercator said in 1569. He drew the Arctic basically in four large chunks, North Pole, separated by channels of flowing water, which met in the middle in a giant whirlpool. Now, if you go on the theory of that is the, you know, all compasses lead north, right? The electromagnetic compass, okay. So if there is that huge black rock, or it was there, and the center of it, in fact, astronomers back then said, from that black rock, if you look straight up, you found the North Star, Polaris, right? So anyway, electromagnetism, swirling waters, drawing everything to the center, several stories of ships being caught in that whirlpool, never seen again. Now, Mercator said that they were four large chunks of land, and he got this idea from two 16th century explorers, Martin Frobisher and James Davis, who each made it as far as what is now northern Canada. Both documented their experiences with vicious currents, which they wrote pulled giant icebergs along like they were nothing. Without cease, it is carried northward. They were being absorbed into the bowels of the earth, Mercator wrote in his original map. Each piece of the Arctic also has a particular quality. According to Mercator's labels, the one in the lower right is supposedly home to the pygmies, whose length is 4 feet. Like another reference to the book that he was talking about and the man that he was getting some information from that actually visited these lands, and it's called the Inventio Fortunata, which describes groups of small statured people living in the polar regions. You know, it's possible the author of the Inventio Fortunata was referring to the indigenous inhabitants back then. The one next door and to the bottom left in his map is apparently the best and most interesting of all chunks, although no evidence is given to support this or to explain why the pygmies wouldn't want to live there instead. And he explains it as a very lush area with huge trees and many different types of animals. After Mercator died in 1594, explorers continued to gain new knowledge of the Arctic, and cartographers revised their view of the poles, and here we go with all the maps. And by 1636, up-to-date maps of the region lacked Mercator's four regions, along with the what he called the Rupus Nigra, the big black rock. And the central whirlpool were not in these maps. Instead, they showed one large piece of land surrounded by smaller islands. So we're still seeing that there was land. Now we're told it is just water and ice floating. And one thing that makes me wonder about that is when you Google, give me the North Pole, on Google Maps, they show just water. And when you look closely, you can see lines in the water, which tell me that's been photoshopped. So why don't they even want to show you what the North Pole is really like? Why don't we even explore it, talk about it? Is it the same reason that when we're discussing the Antarctic, which the heliocentric theory tells us, you know, if you look on the ball Earth, it's on the bottom. The geocentric people tell us that it's an ice wall surrounding the whole Earth, and then the land just keeps going and going. Why did they form the Antarctica Treaty right after one of our great explorers, Admiral Byrd, went there and described the ice wall as well as the vast amount of land that he saw above that wall that just kept going and going? In fact, he did send a helicopter and a couple of an airplane. It never came back. You don't hear that story very often. And if you want to check Byrd out, listen to an interview he did, I believe it was in 1952 or 1954 on CBS, still out there. And you'll start understanding that he saw a big, huge area of land over the wall. Now, why after that did 65 countries get together and form the Antarctica Treaty? Now, that sounds all well and good, but what is the Antarctica Treaty? If you try to go there, they won't let you in. There's a place they put up a barber pole, and they pretend that's the South Pole, and that's as far as you'll get. And I remember seeing a picture of Prince Philip at the Antarctica, by that pole, standing there. I said, it's too cold to get your hair done, Philip, at the barber pole. But we know that's not true. But the treaty was formed to make, and they tell you, it was formed to preserve the Antarctic from any kind of exploration. But let's say I just want to go there and explore, or, you know, more adventurous people who really can do that, they can't. And you will be arrested if you try to cross a line. What are they hiding? But people believe it. You see what I'm talking about? People believe their narrative. Now, I can't prove what I just said. Of course, it's guesswork. But some of what they tell you, you know, a good lawyer is going to tell you the best evidence is suppressed knowledge and evidence. So start from there. Why would they want to hide anything? What is behind there? And boy, maybe if we knew what they knew, we wouldn't be, you know, doing these radio shows as if we're in the dark. We'd have a better idea. But instead, we have to combat that, make suppositions, and put them all together and say, hey, what does make more sense? Then you're still not sure, but at least you have a better idea. And the real key is you know they're lying. And the liars of the world have been doing this for a long time. Thus, you see basically all the bloodlines coming down and the leaders all in lockstep now telling you a narrative about what's going on that is completely false, ruining, destroying many people's lives, destroying commerce, destroying most anything. But people say, yes, believe them. Give them a chance. Why not? I want to go to Walmart. Back in 3 minutes on the Greg Anthony Show and my investigative journal.
Hear it first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net. The program you are listening to is 100% sponsored by you, the listener, on this First Amendment Rights Media channel. You will notice that there are few commercials on this radio network. There's a good reason for that. Corporate advertising dollars come with strings that limit program content. So without your help, these programs cannot continue on satellite, internet, or our several affiliates. If you benefit by the educational law programs, we ask you to give. If you are admonished or nurtured by the Bible and ministry programs, we ask you to give. If some voice a cause that you are passionate about, we ask you to give. If you believe in any of these, we ask you to support them as you would a missionary on a continual basis, as if giving a tithe for Missionary Radio. These programs are not commercially viable and must be supported by those faithful to the cause of truth. Look for the button to sponsor your favorite programs at our Listen and Schedule pages on the Internet. We will also give you unlimited archive access to all of our programs. We're asking you to give much less than a tithe so that you may also send support directly to a particular program host, cause, and anywhere else the Spirit may lead you. Do all to the glory of our God and Creator, for His holy nation, the only kingdom that will last forever. Thank you for listening.
The following program is labeled dangerous and off-limits by the supreme Jesuit command, but stand tall, people. Listen up, and you may just learn something.
Dear Lord Jesus, this ain't happening, man. This can't be happening, man. This isn't happening.
Okay, we're back on the Greg Anthony Show, second half hour here on FirstAmendmentRadio.com on January 6th, 2022 on our calendar. Okay, we're going to get back to the lost history of our earth. And the reason we're doing it is because we've been lied to so many times. We really don't know what happened, maybe even 3 days ago. But anyway, going back hundreds of years, can you imagine the stories they could tell and get us to believe? Well, we've been searching through why these ornate buildings in the 19th century could not have been built by the people back in the Victorian era and even those before that. Where'd they come from? Great facts that you have to chew over, because it's just another lie that may open a door to help you get through that narrow gate. The path that you have to take, which one are you going to choose, the right one or the wrong one? But anyway, it requires a lot of searching, requires a lot of heavy lifting, and we're going to get back to that right now. All these buildings, why did it lead to a question of why were there so many orphans during this period of time in the 1800s. It's amazing, all over the world, something we've never really been told about, the truth about. And all these dots are being connected by a man that goes by the name of E-W-A-R-A-N-O-N. You can find his YouTube spread all over because they've banned his channel. But this is basically these thoughts, this is nothing new. These have been thought about for centuries. We're just trying to put it in perspective and forget a little bit about what's happening to us today. At least not going over the same facts. We know where we're going today. We know what the rulers of evil have in store for us. It's how we're going to basically not follow them. You can't follow them because they're leading you right to hell. Okay, so a lot of this isn't making any sense to you, I know. But let's see what we can do. Let me see if I can get this for you.
Why on earth these cities were empty and full of mud? What happened that meant governments needed to repopulate the earth? And I know what you're thinking. This is all very intriguing, but what does this have to do with flat earth? You want to know more about the firmament, the sun and moon, and our stationary plane. Do not worry. Everything will become clearer as we continue our journey. The prevalent evidence of buried infrastructure, coupled with deserted cities and a burgeoning industry of orphans, is just a start. These are all necessary clues, hinting at some kind of cataclysm, but the real story hasn't truly begun yet. The stage had to be set first, and now it is ready. And even if you cannot see it yet, I know you feel it, viewer. The deserted cities, the buried architecture, and orphans all signal a looming darkness. There is a great black cloud in front of us, and I won't lie, we are heading right into the heart of it. And like I said before, we do not have much time. Come on, it's time for me to honor my promise and take you back to the future.
Yes. We're going back to the future, not the movie.
water, an inorganic, transparent, and odorless chemical substance that covers 70% of the known Earth's surface. It is the driving life force behind the carbon-based organisms that flourish on our Earth. It borders and separates our lands and collects and solidifies at the inner and outer regions of our flat, stationary realm. God should have sent a message to the inhabitants of Earth and been precise and told them to watch the water, to meditate on its function and natural laws, because in their time, a great deception would be cast over them, like a cold shadow of an unknown, nefarious king. And maybe God did send this message in the form of a flood, but his truth was mythologized and buried, and the lie propagated in spite of it. Resting water does not curve and convex. The natural laws of a resting body of water insist that it takes the exact shape of the container it fills, and always finds and maintains a flat level. Resting water always rests flat, and watching the water when we sit at vantage points, when journeying above in planes, and before we take a sip from our drink, we must remember to never forget this law. Most of us instinctively understand the laws of water, and yet many continue their day-to-day willfully participating in the nonsensical heliocentric hoax. But for us that know that our Earth is not a spinning planet in an infinite vacuum of space, the ones that have studied the sun diligently and realize that it is the sun that is moving and not the Earth, the ones that have plotted the illogical routes of flight paths on a globe model and concluded that the model is incorrect, the ones that know that the laws of density govern the rise and fall of objects and have studied vanishing points, the ones that have forsaken conventional telescopic lenses, pondered rainbows, sun dogs, and the stars above us, know that we reside within a dome firmament, and there exists water above us. And the ones that understand that our entire enclosed Earth system is governed by electromagnetism, frequency, and vibration that emanates from a central magnetic North Pole. We are the ones that scratch our heads and wonder how on Earth we got in this heliocentric mess in the first place. And if meditating on the stars in the water beyond our firmament long enough, and on the electromagnetism, frequencies, and vibrations that make them twinkle through so many shades of vibrant colors and geometric patterns, one might perhaps, just perhaps, ask, is there something more to electromagnetism? Something that has been missed or overlooked? Something untold or hidden? Electromagnetism is a fundamental force of Earth. The electromagnetic field takes the form of a torus in which all electromagnetism, frequency, and vibration flows. A toroid is a revolving surface that takes the shape of a donut. Toroidal inductors and transformers are central to generating electric energy. There are many ways in which electromagnetism can be produced. We've looked at some before. We know that a magnetic field can produce electricity, and that electricity can produce a magnetic field. It works both ways. Magnetism and electricity are inextricable. It is a dance of polarity. Electric charges either repel or attract each other. Magnetic poles attract or repel one another. For every North Pole, there is a corresponding South Pole. An electric current passing inside a wire creates a corresponding magnetic field outside of the wire. And an electric current is created in a loop of wire when it is moved toward or away from a magnetic field. Horseshoe magnets are powerful permanent magnets. Due to their shape, in which both magnetic poles are close together, a powerful, strong magnetic field is produced. The horseshoe magnet can also function as an electromagnet. The first ever electromagnet was invented in 1824, we are told, and was in the form of a horseshoe magnet. Its power was evident from the beginning. It weighed only 200 grams, but could lift 4 kilograms of iron. The key to the horseshoe magnet's power is the placement of its poles. You can see the magnetic field here, represented by the vector lines. If you look closely, you can see the concentration of the magnetic field is greater near the poles of the magnet. Since as far back as we can remember, we have been presented with and entertained ideas of the future. Not necessarily our future as individuals, but the future of humanity, technology, and society at large. Whether it is in the form of Hollywood movies, you know the ones, the action films, the science fiction sagas, and the animated kind, or literature, music, and art exhibitions. In these, we see our technology taken to its limits. Crafts fly. Computers live. Robots help out. Holographic screens decorate every room. Cities continue to grow upward into dominating skylines. Some can teleport, and space travel is now possible and the accepted norm. Outside of fiction, we also have sobering documentaries telling us where we are heading, usually featuring narration by an old man, lamenting the unstoppable path we are on. It's all very serious. We are destroying our planet, the only one we have. And we have political parties, non-governmental organizations, and the trusted voices and scientific award-winning geniuses sharing similar messages. And really, when you look closer at both the fiction and the alleged facts, they all share the same underlying premise and principles. We are becoming so technologically advanced that the planet we reside on is no longer enough, or can no longer sustain our activity. The advanced artificial intelligence systems, the flying crafts, the breakthroughs in cloning and medical beds mean that the natural world has suffered as a consequence. And depending on the type of genre you are entertaining, the solution is either 1. For humanity to perish as a result, perhaps destroyed by the very artificial intelligence systems it created in the first place, or perhaps by a natural, lung-choking virus that has mutated and is sweeping the earth to restore natural balance. Or 2. For humans to say goodbye to their lonely little blue ball and head off into space in search of a new home. But you see, there is no globular planet, and there is no space, and therefore all visions of the future are purely fictional, and not particularly innocent. What we don't see emphasized in these visions of the future, however, is the potential of electromagnetism to transform all human life, technology, and society. Which is strange when you consider that all life, and the Earth itself, is impossible without electromagnetism. Why wouldn't visionaries want to explore this in more detail? Could it be that they are not allowed to? Could it be that they are afraid of something? Afraid of us connecting one too many dots, perhaps? And again, horseshoe magnets can act as powerful electromagnets. If a civilization was to advance technologically through the use of electromagnetism, then the horseshoe magnet would certainly have a tremendous role to play in that development. Yes, it certainly would. And it certainly did. The horseshoe magnet. The Arc de Triomphe. Yes, one of the most powerful electromagnets ever constructed.
He is showing pictures of all of the structures
formed in the shape of electromagnets. The Roman Colosseums had one. Arc de Triomphe. What were they a part of? Something much, much larger, maybe. This is a good point to say, go catch that video because the pictures tell a thousand words. The domes, the electromagnet-shaped buildings, the spires, what were they conducting? And they're not only found in one country, but all over. And remember, water is a great conductor of electric. Antennas on tops of the churches. Perhaps they weren't used as churches. Conductor orbs on the top of buildings. Domed resonators. Arches and columns, powerful transmitters. Did they have capacitor batteries?
We see throughout our realm, in which the official liars and controllers of our world have termed historicist, neoclassical, renaissance, gothic, and so on, all belong to one whole unified civilization. A civilization so developed, they had harnessed the power of electromagnetism to such a high degree that they not only built these huge structures, but also crafted them with utter finesse and beauty. A celebration of their own technological advancement. The structures were designed with the sole intention of harvesting and generating electromagnetic energy and distributing it across the world. Their cities, towns, an entire way of life ran and depended on the use of free, clean, and powerful electromagnetic energy. The energy was harnessed and collected from the ionosphere above our heads through the use of antennas, spires, domes, and towers. All the impossible structures we see today have been repurposed and rebranded by our controllers and the citizens of the 19th century. This is not a church. This is not a mosque. This is not a castle. And this is not a government building. These are generators. Powerful and gargantuous. They would collect and generate the electromagnetic energy, which was then stored in huge power stations and distributed and redirected by sophisticated, advanced structures. One of which is a huge electromagnet, or what we've come to know as triumphal arches. The energy was stored in batteries and capacitors, such as towers and obelisks. All cities were constructed across our realm in the form of one big interconnected power grid, much like a huge computer motherboard. I already know what you're thinking. What? He's finally lost it. He had us with Flat Earth, but this is just too much. I know. The backup programming is kicking in. But before you turn away to leave and cast aside your muddy boots, let me show you how it worked. As you know, we live on a flat stationary plane. At the center is a source of magnetism at the North Pole. And directly above this is Polaris, fixed at the central and highest point of a wondrous crystalline dome firmament. Beneath the firmament, different layers of atmosphere exist at different heights. The ionosphere starts at about 30 miles above Earth. It includes a thermosphere and a mesosphere. The ionosphere is an electrical atmosphere that is ionized by the sun's electromagnetism. It also forms the inner edge of the magnetosphere. I know, a lot of big words and abstract concepts. But you are familiar with this process and have been witness to it every day for the entirety of your lives. As you can see, the vials here contain molecular gases that are present in the atmosphere above us. When an electromagnetic source, such as a Tesla coil, is applied within close proximity of these gases, the coil's magnetic field ionizes or charges these gases, and the result is phosphorescent plasma. The gases become colorized. This is why our sky is primarily blue, because the sun's electromagnetic presence ionizes the atmosphere, and the result is colored plasma. When the sun is entering or exiting our region, or what the liars of the world call sunrise and sunset, we see a variety of color gradients due to its distance from the ionosphere above us. When the sun is no longer journeying above our region, the sky loses its color and we can see the stars in the firmament beyond. Although the official scientists designate the ionosphere as an atmospheric layer, it is actually an ethereal layer. Ether is the fabric or element that carries electromagnetism. It connects everything in our realm. It is the fabric that makes the sun and moon and their concentric journey above our disk possible in the first place. Ether is the mysterious fifth element. It connects everything electromagnetically through vibrational energy. It is the glue, the web, the driving force behind absolutely everything. The four other elements, air, fire, water, and earth, only exist because of the ether. They are expressions of ether's vibrations. Cymatics is a good example of ether's presence. The frequencies fed through the Chladni plate make the sand or salt form precise and complex geometric shapes. The higher the frequency, the more complex the geometric pattern. But what is the conduit that takes the frequency's vibrations and allows the sand to take such shape? That is the ether at work. That's why we see fruits and vegetables that closely resemble cymatic patterns. It is the ether at work. All matter is ethereal, and the shape and form of that matter are different expressions of the ether, determined by frequency and vibration. Ether is the bridge between electromagnetic frequency and vibrational energy, and the form of matter itself. You could call it the Holy Spirit of God. The historical and scientific discourse of ether is a deliberately manipulated one. The enemy introduced the truth only to discredit and subsequently bury it. Some of the alleged figures of the...
Okay, Greg Anthony here, and let's stop there for today. Oh boy, I knew I should have listened in science class instead of putting my head down and thinking, I've got to go out and play football later. But anyway, it's never too late. And boy, that was some great information. Hope you follow up on it. We'll be back tomorrow continuing to uncover what these rulers of evil have buried. And have they buried every single truth that is important in our lives? My guess is yes. Back tomorrow on The Greg Anthony Show here on FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Somewhere.
Visit crosstheborder.org, C-R-O-S-S, crosstheborder.org, to get your print, EPUB, or PDF version of Nicholas Arthur's book titled When the Third Temple is Built. That's crosstheborder.org. When it comes to prophecy today, much of the evangelical Christian world has their eyes on Israel, waiting and watching to see when the Third Temple will begin to be built. The plans are drawn, the Jewish people are eager. Most evangelical Christians today believe that the rapture will happen before the Third Temple is built. Hi, I'm Michael Eugene. I was taught that Daniel's 70th week was in the future. Is that really what the Bible teaches? Have we searched the Scriptures and found this to be true? Why is it so important for a re-established Israel to build a Third Temple in Jerusalem? Is it necessary to build a temple?
Hear it first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com. and FirstAmendmentRadio.net.
American Family News, I'm Rusty Pugh. No classes again today in Chicago as frustration grows in a stalemate between the city and its teachers. Jeff Manasso with more.
Frustration is growing in Chicago for a second day. Parents received only an hour's notice that hundreds of thousands of public school students would be forced to stay home following a vote by the Chicago Teachers Union to work remotely over COVID concerns. This mom, Lori Del Favreau, wants teachers back in class.
Children